Welcome to Risky Business News, a podcast on the recent developments in the cybersecurity industry. This is Cătălin Câmpanu, and today's show is brought to you by Rumble, the asset discovery company. We're going to start today's show with some news from Iran. The People's Mujahideen of Iran, or MAK, one of the few political militant organizations opposed to the current Iranian government, took credit on Thursday for the defacement of more than 150 Iranian government websites and the hacking of more than 5,000 CCTV cameras across Tehran, Iran's capital. As part of their intrusion, MAK said they also used the compromised servers of the Tehran municipality to send SMS messages to more than 585,000 Iranian phones. In a statement posted on its website, the political group claimed they carried out the attack with the help of a network of dissidents inside the country. The MAK said they timed the attack to take place on the eve of Ayatollah Khomeini's death, celebrated each year across Iran on June 3rd. MAK said this was the first cyber attack the organization carried out this year after also defacing government websites in March and hijacking TV streams in late January. In other news this week, FBI Director Christopher Wray said on Wednesday that the FBI Boston office blocked a cyber attack orchestrated by Iranian state-sponsored hackers against the Boston Children's Hospital last year. The FBI Director said the Bureau acted on information it received from a private sector intelligence partner. But Wray wasn't the only U.S. official making bold statements on Wednesday. In addition, General Paul Nakasone, the head of U.S. Cyber Command, also told Sky News in an interview that the U.S. has conducted offensive cyber operations in support of Ukraine before the war started. Later in the day, the White House confirmed Nakasone's statement and said that the cyber operations didn't break its national policy of avoiding direct military conflict with Russian forces. In other U.S. government-related news, the U.S. Space Force also rolled out new cybersecurity standards for commercial satellite providers, also known as SATCOMs, who wish to provide services to the U.S. government. In addition, the Cyberspace Solarium Commission, appointed by the U.S. Congress, also published a report on Thursday that touches on the recent skilled cybersecurity personnel workforce shortages that have been plaguing the U.S. private and public sectors for more than a decade. The report makes several recommendations for addressing the issue for both the U.S. government and the private sector alike. In government news from Europe, the Russian government has ordered government workers to stop using foreign-made instant messaging services and move to Russian-based alternatives. According to Kommersant, Russian company VK is currently developing an IM service specifically for Russian civil servants. In the Netherlands, Dutch newspaper De Volkskrant reported on Thursday that AIVD, the Dutch intelligence agency, used hacking tools developed by Israeli spyware vendor NSO Group in 2019. According to the newspaper, the AIVD used NSO Group spyware to catch drugs kingpin Ridoan Taghi. De Volkskrant said the AIVD accessed Taghi's phone to determine his location, and the suspect was later arrested in Dubai and is currently still on trial in the Netherlands. But the Dutch have also been involved in other law enforcement actions this week. In the first, they work with Belgian police and the US Department of Justice to seize free domains that hosted cybercrime services. Together, they seized ipstress.in and ovhbooter.com, the domains of two DDoS for hire services, as well as wileakinfo.to, a domain used to advertise and sell access to more than 10,000 hacked databases. According to Radware's Pascal Heinens, the ipstress.in DDoS for hire service was also used by Ukraine's IT army to carry out DDoS attacks against Russian companies. Soon after the domain was seized, the Ukrainian IT army seems to have switched to a new DDoS for hire service. In addition, Dutch police was also part of a group of law enforcement agencies from 11 countries that intervened this week to disrupt the operations of the Flubot Android malware gang. First spotted in December 2020, the Flubot malware had built a reputation in recent months for carrying out large-scale SMS spam campaigns. Risky Business News has asked Genghis Han Sahin, the founder and CEO of mobile security firm Fred Fabric, to provide a rundown of recent Flubot operations.
Flubot is an Android banking Trojan, which has the main capabilities of stealing credentials. It uses so-called overlays, keyloggers, a cookie stealer to eventually steal banking credentials, wallet credentials like Bitcoin wallets, credit card information. Eventually, the stolen information is used on a separate device. For example, the attackers onboard a new device and then perform fraud. And the reason behind this is that FluBot doesn't have the so-called remote access tool or RAT capabilities or even ATS, automated transfer system capabilities, that all the other Android banking Trojans do have these days. But what really is causing a problem has always been the so-called distribution tactics. They have very much focused on how can we infect as many people as fast as possible. And one of the ways was using a technique called SMS warming, which means that they first collect all the contact information you have on your phone and then use your phone as a stepping stone to send everybody a phishing lure to install the Trojan. And it had a lot of success for them. So in 1 week time, for example, they will be able to infect 10,000 victims. And it was not only happening in the Netherlands or in the UK, it was actually a global problem. Later on, they noticed that the telcos were blocking their SMSs from telecom operator level, and they decided to switch over to MMS. That bypassed many of the so-called telco controls, which had focused many on the SMS blocking. But it didn't stop there for FluBot. So they also investigated ways of replying to like notifications you receive in apps such as WhatsApp or Signal. The strategy did not end in only a very good distribution alone. The other power behind FluBot has always been the backend resilience. So the way the techniques they use, like DNS over HTTPS, specific encryption tactics, domain fronting, this was actually all new in the Android banking Trojan threat landscape. And it resulted in a very difficult time for law enforcement to take down their network. But recently, we have collaborated with a lot of law enforcement, especially with the Dutch law enforcement. Since May 20, the Dutch police were able to take down the backend or the network of FluBot. So not the actors themselves, but the actual network that operated all the bots, which effectively mean that the botnet is now stopped, the distributions are stopped, which is very wonderful news. And what really makes this interesting is that even with all these tactics like domain fronting and your own encryption tactics for sending something to your CNC server, and even domain DNS or like DOE type of tactics of exfiltrating data, didn't stop the Dutch police in taking down the network, which is wonderful news. We have been focused on trying to get this done and stop these infections. The questions that I got asked by a lot of people is, will they come back? Since the network is down, they still have the source code. It's a private group. That's also maybe important to note. It's not a group that sells this product in a commercial way. And we believe that they can come back. This is just a backend network. It's not something they can't set up again. But we do believe that the current efforts, the great efforts of law enforcement, will scare them off temporarily, but they will retry. But the visibility the law enforcement have created in these efforts hopefully will also lead to catching the threat actors behind FluBot. But it didn't have much effect on the mobile threat landscape. So FluBot has always been very powerful in infection numbers, but when it comes to performing actual fraud, other Trojans are a bit stronger. So ExoBot and Anatsa, those Trojans are very powerful Trojans that can perform fraud on the victim's device using remote access tools, full automated transfer systems. And these families are also distributed via the Google Play Store. And that also results in high infection numbers. But the fact that FluBot was taken down doesn't really change the mobile threat landscape, unfortunately. The only thing I would recommend after all this is that don't blindly trust any URLs you receive from messages, but also from markets. So when you download an app from the Google Play Store, don't overtrust what you download from a trusted Play Store, and always check the number of installations.
In other cybercrime and threat intelligence news, CISA published on Wednesday a security advisory warning US organizations that are being extorted by the Karakurt gang that paying the ransom will not always stop the hackers from leaking or secretly selling their data. Three reports published in April this year describe the Karakurt gang as a subgroup of the larger Conti ransomware cartel. Researchers said that data stolen by Conti affiliates in attacks where they fail to encrypt files is usually passed to the Karakurt group to perform a classic data extortion scheme. But Conti hasn't been the only ransomware gang up to shenanigans in recent months. Mandiant said in a report published on Thursday that the Evil Corp cybercrime cartel, which previously operated the Locky, Hades and BitPaymer ransomware strains, is now using the Lockbit ransomware in recent intrusions. Mandiant said the group has stopped operating its own ransomware strains after sanctions from the US Treasury have made it impossible to receive ransom payments. By using ransomware developed by other gangs, Mandiant said Evil Corp may be trying to avoid US sanctions. In other news, cybersecurity firm SecureWorks said that it detected a new wave of ransom attacks targeting Elasticsearch servers that have been left unsecured online. Attackers are accessing unsecured systems, deleting data and leaving a ransom note behind, asking for a Bitcoin payment to restore deleted files. SecureWorks said it found this particular ransom note on around 1200 Elasticsearch databases so far. In cyber espionage news, Microsoft said on Thursday that it discovered a new APT group. The company named this new group Polonium and said that based on current evidence, the group appears to be operating out of Lebanon and has also coordinated with several threat actors based in Iran. In addition, Russian security firm Kaspersky also published a report on LoYu, a Chinese APT, and its use of a new malware strain named WinDealer. The report is particularly interesting because LoYu appears to have carried out man-on-the-side attacks to infect victims with the WinDealer malware. Man-on-the-side attacks are situations where a threat actor sits on the same network as a victim and tries to respond to traffic requests before the victim's ICP does. Kaspersky said LoYu used this technique on several occasions to replace UpUpdate with malicious versions containing the WinDealer malware. For this particular campaign, Kaspersky said the vast majority of LoYu victims were located inside China. In terms of vulnerability news, probably the biggest security flaw disclosed this week is a new zero-day in Atlassian Confluence servers. Attacks with this new zero-day were first identified by security firm Volexity, which said it identified threat actors using the vulnerability to install JSP web shells on affected servers and then deploy a malicious server implant called Behinder. At the time of this podcast, there is no patch for this zero-day, and Atlassian has recommended that companies put Confluence servers behind firewalls or take them offline until a patch is ready. In addition, over the past few days, we also had a few reports where vendors didn't patch security vulnerabilities. The first of these reports comes from security firm SecConsult, which said it found a backdoor account in JetPort serial devices manufactured by Cornix. SecConsult said it tried for 2 years to convince Cornix to remove the backdoor account, but the vendor decided that it needed the account for customer support, and it also believed that a threat actor could not crack the password in a reasonable amount of time. The second report of an unpatched security flaw comes from security firm SonarSource. The company published a report this week detailing a vulnerability in the Horde webmail email client that remained unpatched and which could be used to hijack underlying email servers. SonarSource said that the Horde team patched another bug but passed the fix as a fix for this issue, meaning that the underlying vulnerability remains unpatched. In other vulnerability news, Checkpoint said this week that it found vulnerabilities in Unisoc baseband chips that open modern smartphones to remote attacks. Unisoc is the fourth largest baseband chipset maker after MediaTek, Qualcomm and Apple, and its chips are widely used in low-cost Android devices sold across Africa and Asia. As for general tech news, Apple published a report on Wednesday summarizing its work in protecting the App Store. The company said that its safety systems blocked more than $1.4 billion in US dollars in potentially fraudulent transactions, preventing the attempted theft of user funds, and also blocked more than 1.6 million risky or vulnerable app installs. In addition, the company said that it deactivated more than 170 million fraudulent customer accounts and more than 800,000 fraudulent developer accounts. That about does it for today's news. In the following segment, we'll hear from our sponsor, Rumble Spearsberry, who'll talk about the recent privacy scandal in Canada surrounding the popular Tim Hortons coffee chain.
From online activity to physical location, user tracking has been a lucrative and sometimes abused technology. This week, the Canadian government released their findings of privacy law violations by the popular coffee and donuts chain Tim Hortons. Apparently, Tim Hortons' mobile app misled consumers regarding its location data collection. The user's physical location was tracked every few minutes of every day in the background, regardless if the app was actively in use or not. This location data was also shared with an American third party who was permitted to sell the de-identified version of this data to others. Even though Tim Hortons claimed to only look at aggregate non-identifiable location data for their analyses, there's still the risk that this location data could be abused. And for any sale of data by the third party, the risk exists for that location data to be re-identified to specific users. Analyzing any one person's location data can surface sensitive personal information, including where they live, work, and worship. There is the potential to infer private personal details such as someone's religion or sexual orientation. Over the years, many businesses have been caught abusing user location data. Perhaps the recent anti-tracking inclination of a few technology companies will shift things more in the users' favor. In the meantime, stay vigilant, y'all.
This is it for today's show. You can subscribe to this podcast by going to risky.biz and to our newsletter by going to riskybiznews.substack.com.